Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
He's the legendary foodie who once conquered a 2 kilogram sandwich, adiosed 15 dozen oysters, and saw off the world's hottest hellfire sushi. Now watch out, Britain, he's coming for us. His new show, Adam Richman Eats Britain, continues on Mondays at 9 on Discovery Plus. And we're all a fan of the dude from Man v Food. It's Adam Richman!
Thank you. Richman! Oh my gosh, coming I want that hot. To be my ringtone from now.
Now, you haven't done radio, but boy, you got the voice for it.
That means a lot. It's something I actually really would like to do one day.
Come and do it here.
Come
and do it on this station.
Anytime you need a day off, I would be honored. I mean, you're a legend, so I don't know if I could hold your candle.
Mate, you can do it. And boy, you could rap all your links. Because we there was a Yorkshire Pud rap in Leeds on episode one of your new show. And then you actually gave us a Yorkshire Pud rap.
Which was weird.
I can remember
saying
it?
To people a little bit, but I remember just saying things like, ultimately, you actually want me to spit rhymes now? Because I remember telling people, I was like, I actually have bars like a cell phone. I'm sorry. Like, this wasn't indicative of my rapping ability. But I think that was kind of the thing that I wanted to, you know, treat these things with respect and reverence, but also relax, dude.
Have
it's just
fun,
food.
Man.
Thank
have
you.
Fun.
But yeah, I said, when, you know, for your hunger needs, when you're in Leeds, I forget what it
no,
is.
No, don't worry about it. I shouldn't have put you on the spot.
It's
That's
okay.
not fair.
It's okay.
That is not fair of me to do. We're going to have all the fun. We're going to get it done. And we might get a wrap by the end of this chat. We don't know yet. We don't know.
Wow.
So Adam Richman is here. Adam Richman Eats Britain. Okay, it's on the telly now. We got to see episode 2 last night because we have these encoded links, as well as episode 1. It's on the Food Network. If people don't know you, for potential future fans, can you give them a potted history, please? Of
me?
Yeah, why not?
Sure. From Brooklyn, New York. Went to college for international studies in French. Got into broadcast working for the Olympics in 96. Went to Yale Drama for my acting degree, my acting master's in 03. Started acting regionally. Started a food journal in 95.
Just because?
I know. I'll be honest with you. I had a really rough breakup and I bought one of those like Moleskine books to write like kind of cheesy breakup poetry.
Yeah.
And
We've all done it.
I used to go for drives in Atlanta because I'm not from there. And I started just writing and I couldn't really journal like, dear diary, today was a hard day. And I just started writing about the restaurant and the Van Morrison that was playing and the food. And my feelings kind of came out inadvertently. And it led me down this path of writing down or keeping records of pretty much every place I had gone. And then when I auditioned for Man vs. Food in 2008, the show was actually meant for someone else, quite frankly, I was able to speak, you know, with some degree of like authority on foods around the country.
Because you're a fan.
I'm a fan, and I love the story and the language of food. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you can't be inside the rope for being the creator, the content creator, you can still be inside the rope for being the fan, can't you? And that's the thing.
Passion is passion.
Just get inside the rope, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. What do they say? A critic is a legless man who writes about running. That ultimately, you know, like you said, get in the ring. And I think you're 100% right. And I think that people respect passion. And ultimately, when I was doing Man versus Food, not everyone can play football like Erling Haaland and not everyone can dunk like Michael Jordan, but everyone can eat, and under the right circumstances we could eat quite a bit. And I think that to be able to elevate independent businesses, especially after having them like kneecapped by the pandemic, what an honor.
Yeah, no, good for you, pal. Good for you.
Thanks, man.
And so Man versus Food originally meant for someone else. Didn't know that. All right.
Yeah.
Do you know who?
I've heard that it was the host of a show that was once out called Human Weapon. I don't know his name, and I'm not maligning him. I that was the scuttlebutt I had heard, but I came in as this kind of dark horse that had a culinary background because I've been working in kitchens since I was 13. I speak a few languages, which was, I guess, kind of helpful in terms of communication. And I could speak decent kitchen Spanish as well. And and having the journal and having connections at different places certainly helped as well.
So for people who don't know what Man Versus Food was, do you have an elevator pitch that you could share?
Elevator pitch. Okay. A rakishly handsome, somewhat inflated looking Robert Downey Jr. crossed with Fred Savage looking individual goes around the country to the most iconic and beloved eateries that locals have gone to and undertakes food challenges that locals have done in an effort to achieve, hopefully, lasting food glory.
Right, so food challenges like what? Give us 15 dozen
oysters at Acme Oyster House in New Orleans.
15 dozen?
Yes, 180 oysters.
In a certain time?
Just to finish them and not have a reversal of fortune, as it were.
What do you call it again?
A bacchanalian response.
Yes,
exactly.
Have you experienced many bacchanalian responses in
your
career?
On the show, no. One of the things that I was very adamant about, my mom was also, I mean, my mom is my hero. And, you know, one of the things, I didn't really care about my career. I just didn't want my mom to not be proud of me. You know, she's the best and she's been supportive throughout. But I have a dignity as a human being, and I don't really want that on camera if I could help it. The other thing was I had another less than pleasant breakup right around that time, and I remember after the challenge, and I had won, and the first commercials for Man Versus Food were airing, we went out as a crew, and I met this lovely lady in New Orleans, and we were just talking, and some random guy walks by and goes, "Careful, girl, he just had 180 oysters."
Oh my goodness.
Like, come on.
So there were some timed events, because I've seen them on YouTube.
Oh yes, without question.
So give us a couple of those.
Oh, time challenges. So, yeah. For example, I don't know how familiar you are with American baseball, but so there is something known as the seventh inning stretch. And so from the seventh inning stretch till the end of the baseball game, I had to eat a hamburger that was conservatively the size of maybe this seat I'm sitting on. And you have no idea. A game could end quickly if there are three outs right away, or it can take longer. And thankfully, one guy got on base and bought me a little bit more time to finish it. Other times I had to eat scorching habanero fritters in Portland in like some kind of crushing time limit. Another one, Joe Rogers Chili Parlor in Springfield, Illinois. It was five bowls of just incendiary, like uranium chili. Like Oppenheimer level chili in something like a half hour as well.
Oppenheimer's chili.
I watched that one.
Yeah, that was good.
Rachel, by the way, Rachel's expression says it all. That's what it's like. So sometimes you hear about something, well, it's probably not like that, but if it was how it sounded, or it were how it sounded, this is how I'd react. That is how it is. It was an extraordinary show, and it exploded on world television, didn't it?
I'm blessed. Yeah, we're in about 36 countries, 38 countries, something like that.
Wow.
But again, you know, you make a TV show with no guarantee of an audience. In fact, we were the little show that could. We had the smallest budget. I was the B-cam op on the first couple of shows. And, we shot the same the first commercial inside the same place where I did the pizza challenge in Atlanta, Georgia, or Kennesaw, Georgia. And, you know, to see the impact it's had, to know how many restaurateurs I've stayed in touch with that have talked about how that show changed the trajectory of their lives and their fortunes.
So it did help. I mean, you know, there's one school of thought saying, you know, this isn't good, it's about stuffing your face, da da da. What were the positives from the show that occurred?
I mean, 80 to 300% more increase in business for independent businesses devoid of a marketing budget prior to the pandemic, the single worst time to be an independent restaurant operator. Selfishly, it gave me my career. It gave me a leg up. It gave me the chance to elevate other people and produce other people. I now sponsor a football club here up in Lincolnshire called Broadley FC. Yeah. And we've raised about £40,000 for blood cancers here in the UK. So I think that, I mean, the ripple effects are profound. You know, how many people were able to build their resumes, build their careers off of that show. It means a great deal to have been sort of at the eye of the storm there.
And some of the challenges, as the program, you know, exponentially got this huge following, you know, you'd have like audiences live in the restaurant.
Without question.
And it was like a football game.
A gladiatorial environment. That was quite honestly what I felt like. I don't really watch professional wrestling so much as I did maybe when I was a little kid, but I think that was very much it. I mean, it was combat, and it needed to be life and death. And I think people didn't realize that, yeah, you have to schmaltz it up a little bit, and you have to sort of amp it up a little. But quite frankly, I couldn't afford cable until I got on cable. And I remember having this very visceral, like, gut check of going, if people are going to spend a half hour with me instead of the other 999 other channels, I owe them the debt of incredibly hard work, no compromise, and there can be no quarterfinal. Every match must be championship.
Yeah. It's the only way to be, really, isn't it?
Honestly, and even now doing Adam Richman Eats Britain on Food Network, sure, it's lovely to have a sandwich and sandwich or a Bakewell tart and Bakewell, and they're wonderful. But the other thing is to realize I need to be inclusive of all of modern Britain. And again, post-pandemic, this is a hard time for restaurants everywhere. The cost of living here, higher than ever. And to go, oh my God, this Cameroonian woman lives in the Peak District, and rather than make fry-ups and rather than make fish and chips, she's going to just be true to herself and bring unbelievable Cameroonian flavors to Hucklow, and to go to Thurlston and see molecular gastronomy at a little tiny tavern called Dom. I mean, that was, it's been amazing. And I think, let's be honest, most Americans, when they say I've come to England, they've come to London.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with London. I love the Big Smoke. But to go to Somerset for the first time, I mean, sure, you giggle when
it's
you hear names like Wookie Hole and Butkin or whatever else. But then to go, okay, I've had the cheddar, I've had my scrumpy, I've listened to the Wurzels. What next? And then all of a sudden you go to Putney Farm and you're pulling celeriac out of the ground and they're cooking it right there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, this is a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, you got your little wallop, your middle wallop, and your great wallop, and you got all that going on. You got your little Hampton, your big Hampton, etc. You start in Leeds because your granddad was there.
Correct. We filmed it out of order, but yeah, my great-grandfather, William Davis, was a tailor in Leeds. And it was always very funny to me how my great... I never really twigged, you know, what do they say? The penny didn't quite drop. But my grandma would say dear rather than expensive. She would say bin as opposed to trash can. And no other kids' grandmas in Brooklyn were doing that. You know what I mean? And he was always incredibly well put together. And she insisted, I mean this in earnest, that I carry a handkerchief and I always held the door for ladies and stood when they came to the table. And there was a kind of comportment that I think... traditionally British sort of sensibility.
You have a lovely sort of semi-Brit articulation about you as well.
Oh, what a fun thing to say.
You have a beautiful resonance. You have a musical voice. You have the New York rhythm, which is gorgeous, which
thanks,
again
brother.
Is musical.
Thank
but you
brother.
Have these absolutely classical British idioms about you. Do you think
Do
you think that comes from your lineage, maybe?
I mean, to an extent, my dad being an attorney, may rest in peace. My mom being a teacher and an assistant principal, I think part of that, because they would not tolerate slang. And it was tough because I would want to hang out with my friends and be like, yo, what's up, fam? How you doing, kid? Whatever. And then all of a sudden, my mom was like, you will not call me dude. You will. let me. And my mom has a right cross like a Guatemalan lightweight. So I was not going to mess with that. And but that's the other thing too that I love so much about this, with the way the accents change. I had never been to Liverpool or Wales, and then all of a sudden I'm hearing like a Scouse accent, a Welsh accent. This was my very first trip to Scotland, happened on this show when we filmed in Perth. I had haggis for the first time and the best shortbread of my life, and had a, let me see if I do this right, a scone in Scoon. Is that right?
Yeah,
I think so.
I got there.
And Aberdeen, and even though I didn't go to Cullen, having Cullen Skink in Aberdeen, Aberdeen Angus in Aberdeen. But again, I have some friends that are Scottish, like Martin Compton or Kevin Bridges, and played on my soccer team with James McAvoy. But there is something about like hearing the accent and the musicality in that.
It's gorgeous,
I just loved
isn't it?
It.
It's
absolutely.
So gorgeous. It's
absolutely.
So beautiful. You played in Soccer Aid and it made you cry, didn't it? When you heard you'd been picked for the all-comers team, rest of the world.
Oh my God.
You cried?
this is a true story. I'm like remembering the moment. It's actually, I'm quite shaken right now thinking about it, but I will never forget. And it shows like, you know, let your haters be your motivators. I really wanted to play, and some people said some pretty caustic stuff to me online about, you know, someone my size wanting to play, and I'd be better off feeding my leg to starving people.
That's nice of them.
Yeah, it was really lovely. But then the thing is, you have two choices. You can buckle and cry and have self-pity. You can go, no, you know what? I'm going to make you eat those words.
Yep.
And I worked for 2 years, and my mate, Nicky Hollander, who now is Steve Akarigi's coach, I was coaching him at Liverpool and Sal Kalou, and he, we connected, and I moved out to LA and I trained with him and played with Hollywood United and was doing 2-a-day practices, dropped over 100 pounds. I don't know what that is in stone. You'll have to forgive me. And yeah, it was, I mean, I didn't get that much time on the pitch, but the memories last forever. And I've maintained friendships with, you know, Nicky Byrne and Patty Keelty and, you know, Patty McGinnis.
Nice.
It was the funniest thing is I just did, there's a chat show at America called Good Morning America, and James McAvoy had come in to promote It, one of the It movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was this wall around him, you know, we durst not touch Professor Xavier, you know? And I'm like, is that my rest of world teammate? And he's like, get in.
It was so good.
How are you, pal? You're looking good. And I was
By the way, 6¾ stone, I think, is 100 pounds. So congratulations.
Yeah, well, I found some of that back. Thank you,
well,
Fish
you
and Chips and Shoom.
Back to Man versus Food again. I mean,
yes.
you for that, you had to train twice a day and you famously wouldn't eat for the day before.
That's correct.
And that all really happened because you were consuming so many calories. Did you ever do a calorie count? How did that work, those metrics in your head?
Only when I was training for soccer aid was I more cognizant of the calories that I had. And it was almost obsessive because I, you know, was truly trying to create a caloric deficit. It was very hard to do. But I had a very couple very good doctors that I went to right when I got the show, and they told me I needed to take like a prophylactic stance instead of a reparative one. So if I waited till damage happened and tried to fix it. So he said, I need you to look at 30 minutes of physical activity a day like a life-saving pill. Mm-hmm. The other thing was everybody would think, they'd see my mentions on social media and think I was this like sort of foodie playboy gallivanting around the United States. And the funniest thing was, yes, there would potentially be attention, but I will never forget this, and this was ubiquitous. I would do a challenge or something, and my crew would go out with waitresses and people that were at the restaurant and have a great old time. And I remember it was like the baton death march. I would have a gallon of water dangling off of this finger, my right pointer finger, and I would put my head on the console of the treadmill. And I remember, and that was after every challenge, and sitting there and trying to flush my system out. And he said, I don't want you to be static. I need you to start getting your blood
flowing. So I presume you saw the movie Super Size Me.
I have.
And I would imagine you were the only person in the world that thought, that's kid stuff.
No. I could relate. In fact, one of the things that was most impactful that I think people are unaware of, I think they feel it's, oh, it'll be your heart, or they think they're the aesthetic things of like, oh, wow, you know, you've got, you know, more, what do they say? I don't know. Just gigantic, whatever. And then at the end of the day, there are other ramifications. You can have fatty infiltration in your liver, like Morgan Spurlock did in Super Size Me. Weight can affect your joints in a profoundly adverse way. So I think that it was also like...
So did you recognize a lot of what was going on with him?
Without question. And I actually empathize with him quite a bit.
You met him?
Huh?
Have you met him?
No, I've never met him.
You two could have a chat, couldn't you? I would imagine.
I will, but he's managed to lose his weight, so I'm very jealous.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
You're also a qualified sushi chef?
That was my first training, yeah.
Okay, wow. I mean, we're all, I think even people who don't like sushi are still fascinated by sushi.
Yeah.
Because it seems so simple, but it can't be, because it seems there are sushi masters. There's Oscar winning documentary about a sushi master.
Exactly right. Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Yeah. And the thing is, so I was supposed to take a course with my father, and then he passed away. And as a gift for getting into Yale drama, my stepmother, who sadly since has also passed away, had paid for she and I to get training together. So I did that, and yeah, you sort of bump into, and it was also, this was also a very good wake up call too, right? I mean, I'm a white American guy. Things normally open up, doors open up for us, and suddenly places don't want to hire a white American sushi chef. And it was a good lesson in humility and the way the world works. And you're going, you know, you've had it very easy, and you need to see how the other half lives in some ways. And
can you still wield a sushi knife with aplomb?
I'm pretty nice with it. I remember that was like a good, that was like a second date meal. Like, if I were to go in.
Do you have a super knife at home?
I've got quite a few. I have a little bit of a knife. I have a little bit of a knife addiction.
Yeah, in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sharpening wise, because there's a real art to sharpening a knife, isn't there?
I think so. I mean, I think that there's like simple mechanics, but I think it ultimately depends if you're using a honing steel or if you're using a stone that you're
a whetstone
correct. Yeah. And I think that you know, there are so many things, but it's ultimately about applying pressure and feeling if there's a burr that comes up on either side. And luckily there are services. There's I do a lot to support the troops, and I work with the troops back in the States quite a bit, and I was the chairman of the board of the Armed Forces Federation. And so there's a place that's a veteran-owned business where they do sharpening, and just to give them a little bit of love, they come through and sharpen all my stuff.
We have a massive show here called Saturday Kitchen. Are you going to go on it?
Have.
You have been on it?
With James Martin.
James used to do it, and now Matt Tebbutt does it. So James is on ITV, so he does his own show.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
So it doesn't matter. They're on at the same time, to be honest. I think there's some friendly rivalry. I'm saying friendly rivalry going on. Yeah.
Oh, forgive me, James, for confusing your show.
No, don't worry. I'm sure they'd have... I mean, I'm sure Saturday Kitchen would love to have you back on. I'm sure James would too. I went on there once, and I dared to give my knife sharpening tips on the show.
Mm.
So I don't know if you've ever done this. Have you ever used the bevel on a car window? Do you know this one?
What?
So if you lower a car window,
okay,
and then you get your favorite knife,
okay.
If you use the edge of the window like a whetstone, right? Unbelievable.
It works.
Unbelievable. And so you do that first of all right? And it's all right for the car window. It won't damage the window. The glass. You do that first, and then you take your leather belt off, and then you—I don't know what you call it—but you swish it on the back of the belt, and that takes the edges off, the slivers of metal,
the little burrs,
the burrs that have been caused by the sharpening of on the window. And then the way I tested it on Saturday Kitchen was I threw apples up, and you know you can go straight through the apple in the air.
Yeah,
great tip. Just thought I'd share that with you.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that. To be fair, though,
sure
if you're doing a barbecue.
Up around up
no, but if you're doing, yeah, exactly. But if you're doing a barbecue and stuff, I mean, I think there is a little bit of that. I love that stuff. That's kind of technical wizardry. I mean, you know, it's that first time you roll an avocado down the length of your knife and split it and whatever else. Those little tricks, I mean, that little bit of flourish, why shouldn't you? Why shouldn't you flex?
What's the matter, Vassos?
You do what with an avocado?
Oh, so if you take an avocado, you have a large chef's knife.
Yeah.
Well, you can be very flash and throw it up and catch it on the blade. But if you do it, you can pop it on the blade and roll it. And then you can quite literally unscrew.
Yeah, by the way, he's a sushi chef.
He's
knife skills plus plus.
Yeah. No, but no, I you give me far too much credit. But quite honestly, you can or you can simply hold the knife static, put the avocado on it, roll the avocado along the length of it, and you quite literally unscrew the halves, and then you pop your knife into the pit, turn it 90 degrees, and it will come out.
I'm going to try that today.
I'm seeing Amanda Ross next week. She's in charge. She owns Saturday Kitchen. She invented it. She has to get you on.
Tell her to have me on, yeah.
Well, I'm going on in June, so maybe we could go
together.
Let's
cut together.
And then you could do all this
stuff.
We'll bring the car
let's and do the thing.
Let's have fun, man.
But that's the other thing, too, I got to say, that I feel that British food has been so unfair. Fairly maligned, and I mean this in earnest. And I know that, like, oh, American food, we hear about the barbecue and the burgers and the whatever and the whatever. But the thing is, the bounty of this country, of the countries that I went to, is nothing short of remarkable. And in fact, I don't know if you know who Chef Duff Goldman is. He does Ace of Cakes.
I wish I could say yes, but I'm saying no.
He does Ace of Cakes on Food Network. He's essentially me with just bald. We are like look identical. And
is it really you?
I know, right? Exactly. I wish. Sadly, I think like genetics have taken the hair away from me anyway. But he talked to me about this when I filmed at a wonderful place called the Bailiwick in Surrey that's on the show. That the dairy here might very well be the best in the world. The eggs, whether you get Norfolk, just bright orange yolks, the cream and the double cream, the milk from
Stop
all around Somerset.
Stop it now.
We went to a milk dairy farm in Chedzoy, and I didn't know that you lot call chocolate milk a milkshake. Mm. And they said, oh, there's a milkshake machine at this dairy farm. But what's really remarkable is to see how dairy farmers are so resourceful, you know, with their profit margins ever decreasing. And you can go and get farm fresh milk. You like tap a credit card, you could choose a bottle or a glass, and there's banana and strawberry and candy floss flavored milk, which is terribly troubling. And but the other thing is too, again, just being aware that the modern British bounty, it's not all boiled, buttered, steamed and fried. Like it's equal parts African and Central American and Eritrean and Middle Eastern and Southeast Asian. I mean, my friend from Romford can order Indian food better than I can. It's just really funny hearing him do it with the accent. Hearing him, I think I'll have it, you're crazy.
It's so funny, isn't it? Adam Richman Eats Britain, Mondays, 9 p.m. on Food Network or stream on Discovery Plus. Rachel!
I was fascinated by the fact that you have such a breadth of experience of food and tastes and flavours and culinary styles. But when you were stood in that market in Leeds, you had your mind blown by the fact that they were putting tuna on a jack of potatoes.
Still blows my mind.
But that's really standard.
Here. If I did that in America, they'd put me away.
Really? Did you try it?
I did. I have a wee video I shot, and I am... Yeah, there are certain combinations. Well, like, for example, rhubarb and custard, like ubiquitous here. Wasn't there even a cartoon here?
Yeah, there was.
And a sweet. A boiled sweet.
And I had no... Again, and there's sweets called that, and there's a wonderful sequence, and I wish we were able to include more of it. While we were in Melton Mowbray, went to the most wonderful sweet shop, and I didn't recognize a gold darn thing. And literally, it was the crew going, make him eat a dolly mixture. What? Have foam shrimp and bananas. I'm like, who the hell eats shrimp and bananas? And how did you choose those two things? Was aardvark and avocado not available? Let's do shrimp and bananas. But that was the thing. Dolly mixtures, shrimp, foam shrimp, cola cubes.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry about all these. Hello. I used to PR for Adam, says Sal. For his Food Network show, Man vs. Food Nation. And he may not remember, I bet you do, but he came and did the infamous pancake race at Borough Market in 2014. He took it brilliantly seriously.
Way too seriously.
Some awesome warm-up lunging also took place. Do you remember that?
There was not only warm-up lunging. Oh, my God. Well, hello, Sal, by the way. I was annoyingly serious. So this was the first time people were seeing me here, having dropped a bit of blubber. And I'm... Part of the secret to Man vs. Food success is that I am relentlessly competitive. I'm not the person that will like turn to my little cousin while playing Monopoly and be like, in your face. But I ran warm-up laps.
Yes, it comes so easily to you, that phrase.
yeah, without question. But just not to my little cousin. I love her very, very, very dearly.
That's the first time he's done it somehow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying it's never been done, just never to my little cousin. Yeah. But yes, I did lunges. I did warm-up laps. And I was literally like running, who won it? Who won it? Like, and then I was literally teaching the crew. I was like, watch me. I'm going to teach you how to flip.
Yeah.
You want to get about one third of the pancake out and then you pull it back and it will flip on its own inertia. Oof. And I'm trying to get it. Yeah, I was.
You should see the game face here on the radio.
I went way, way too ham. I was.
So Man vs. Food, massive. This show, beautiful. It couldn't be more different. But you are
such a
great communicator.
Thank you.
A presenter. You were in it. You're speaking from the heart. And if you speak from the heart, we hear it.
Thank you.
In our own hearts.
That's
it's
super
good,
kind.
Man. And I like the 27-minute episodes as opposed to the hours. The hours can drag sometimes.
Without question.
And you need a really big kind of cinematic crew for the hours. You know, I'm sure you love Phil Rosenthal's Somebody Feed Phil, but that's big. It's huge budget, this kind of stuff going on. It's all very good.
I can't help thinking that, and I haven't. I wanted to ask you this when I was watching some catch up on YouTube last night, Man vs. Food. You clearly achieved this this exponential following. It looked like it would be a good live show. Did you take it on the road off the TV? Do you have a big live following? Do you have a live show in you? Do you?
I have done a few. I've done a few at different like theaters around the US, and where like I'll bring a couple on stage, and I said, you know, who in the crowd, you know, who's in a couple that wants their guy to cook for them a little bit more. And I'll bring a couple on stage and hit them with a pink pin spot and play the girl from Ipanema while he cooks for her. I've done stuff at colleges and stuff. It's been a while, but you know, my background again, you know, I went to the Yale School of Drama. I've been acting since I was about 9. I produced a play here in London at the Southwark Playhouse. So, I mean, I guess I always have that innate sort of performer thing in me, but I think that now, I don't know, I've really recently become enamored of screenwriting. So and of doing radio, ironically enough. So I think those are the two masters I'm going to try to serve moving forward. And honestly, again, as you said, the ability, you know, that the public has granted me to move from quantity to quality, and the way the British public has embraced me is so humbling. And again, it's the same thing I felt when I first saw Man vs. Food among 1,000 channels. And I say this to everyone that can hear this broadcast. The love you have given me, Britain, is something that has touched me, has touched my family, has given me opportunities beyond my wildest dreams. And I hope that you see this new show for the love letter that it is to all of you.
Nice. Very well said, really, my friend. Well. Very well
Thank
said.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Before you go, we have a very good friend of the show. He also works for the company. His name is Mark Wogan. His dad will always be the most legendary broadcaster of this kind of show there's ever been, sadly no longer with us. A massive gastronome himself. His son, Mark, is a fantastic restaurateur. He also has a podcast called Spooning.
Okay.
And he wants you to go on it before you leave on the 18th of March. Do you have a 2-hour window?
I will make a window. It's for the name of the show alone.
Yeah, you will not regret it. It's a great show.
That means a lot.
Also, I think you and him getting together, something else might happen, don't you?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I don't know what that means.
No, for the good. For the good.
But that's the other thing, too. I have to say that there are foodies lurking throughout, like this. You know, I knew that Rio Ferdinand, for example, had a restaurant. But my friend Nick Frost, a wonderful cook, a very knowledgeable foodie. And I think that the opportunities now that, whether it's social media or streaming cable, has given voice to, I mean, Phil Rosenthal, the showrunner from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, usually you think of, oh boy, you hear like Ray's voice every time you look at him, ma. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, he's eating pão de queijo in Brazil. And you're going like, oh, you got a food story to tell too. And I love it.
Yeah, and it's about the authenticity of it. You know, the fact that you have just told us all you've told us about screenwriting, about the fact you produce plays in Southwark in London, you're an actor, your mum and dad and their wordsmithery and their love of words. Mm. You know, suddenly you go, oh, yeah, of course that's why it's a good show, because you're a great storyteller.
That's very thoughtful.
However, you're not a brilliant spontaneous rapper. Fortunately,
terrible.
We do have your rap from the show. Here we go.
It's really bad.
The man's got the power with milk, eggs and flour when you got hunger needs and you're in Leeds with the most to most from coast to coast when you need that roast. That's that Yorkshire pudding rap. All right, I'm deeply grateful.
Control room round of applause for...
Yeah!
Come on! The Yorkshire pudding rap!
Hey, look, I was fueled by pure horseradish on that one. I haven't eaten today.
Adam, I hope you've enjoyed being on the show.
I've absolutely
Thank
loved
you.
It.
Thank you. That's Adam Richman Eats Britain. Mondays, 9 p.m. on the Food Network. He's going to stick around here because we need to twist his arm right up behind his back to get him to do some other stuff, which I'm sure you'll enjoy doing.
Yeah, of course. I'm right here.
When you want your favourite 80s songs to lift your mood, play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk. I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm a hero. I'm
holding out for a hero till the end of the night. Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.
I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.